the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 75 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. I am your guide in this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. So a lot of podcasts seem to celebrate their 100th episode, and I will probably do that as well, but I think 75 episodes is reason to celebrate also. And it's also a reason to bring back one of my favorite authors to the podcast. And I was grateful to be able to find this radio adaptation of Fahrenheit 451, because it definitely is one of Ray's greatest works. And it's actually the book that introduced me to Ray Bradbury in the first place. I was assigned to read this book when I was in high school. And that was my first introduction to not only Ray Bradbury, but to dystopian futures and projecting that into the future as somewhat of a cautionary tale. And like most things I was assigned to read, I did quite enjoy Fahrenheit 451. And I think maybe at the time I got a lot of its points, because I really did read the book and I really did catch some of its meaning that it was trying to get across. Now, I know that I definitely didn't get all of it because, hey, I was a high school student, so I had a lot of other things I was thinking about at the time. But uncommonly, I found myself enjoying these things that we were assigned to read. And it definitely opened up a world of great fiction for me in introducing me to Ray. So I've talked about Ray many times here on the podcast and featured many of his stories, and I really like how this one was done. But if you haven't heard those previous episodes, or if you're new to Ray Bradbury, then let me tell you a little bit about him. Ray Bradbury is one of the world's greatest science fiction writers. However, some may argue, including Ray himself, that he writes fantasy rather than science fiction. He once said that Fahrenheit 451 was his only true science fiction work. His stories may tell us very little about actual science, but a great deal about the netherworld of imagination buried deep within all of us. In addition to over 1,000 short stories, several novels, and a handful of plays, Ray Bradbury has also written poetry and scenarios. He adapted the novel Moby Dick for the movies, and has seen several of his own stories made into motion pictures, as well as television and radio shows. His writing has appeared in nearly every American magazine publishing quality fiction, and in over 100 anthologies of short stories. He's definitely a hero of mine, and I'm going to give you a little bit of tidbit of his writing advice after the story, so stay tuned for that. But this adaptation that you're going to hear today was first heard on the radio program CBC Stage. Now, the Stage series was for many years the flagship program of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which were broadcasted from 1946 all the way into the 1970s. I believe this program aired somewhere in 1971. But CBC's Stage series spawned and launched many careers of notable actors, such as Lorne Greene, Christopher Plummer, Barry Morse, William Shatner, and James Doohan. In their day, the Stage series actors were called the best radio repertory company in North America by the New York Times radio editor Jack Gould. The Stage series is comprised of wonderful adaptations from classic novels together with excellent Canadian works. So come with me and let's journey into self-examination and independent thought.
really all literature is dangerous to a regime that fears the free flow of ideas, because the literature in its most fundamental way is meant to forge connections among human beings.
Because you don't know where it takes you. Knowledge is always unpredictable. There is always a risk. It is like Alice jumping down that hole, running after that white rabbit, not knowing where she goes. And for tyrants, control is the main thing.
Reverend, we have a little problem. I heard that the English teacher over at the school is planning to teach that book.
Slaughterhouse Bob. Isn't that an awful name?
Oh, yeah, it's a great book. Slaughterhouse Five. Yeah, it's a classic.
Do you read much?
Maybe in another town it's a classic.
In any town.
Tom Sawyer is a classic.
In 1933, in April, Nazi German students decided to organize a nationwide book burning program to eliminate foreign influence, to purify German culture as they saw it.
I remember very distinctly a conversation between my parents and some friends who were all shocked that a nation like the Germans, an educated, highly intelligent nation, would burn books. Books never hurt anybody.
What is this, Roger? I don't know this book.
I would hope you wouldn't.
Reverend Moore, Mrs. Evans is calling about that dance over at the school.
Oh, would you tell her I'll call her back right after Junior Bible? Mary, now, what were you saying?
This was found in one of the athletic lockers over at the school. A book like this should be burned. We should go to the library and remove this corruption from the shelves.
Well, there's no sense blowing it up into something that it isn't.
Well, I think it's quite obvious what it is.
Well, it's not quite so obvious how I should handle it.
Reverend, if you'll excuse my saying so, when we got rid of that young English teacher over at the school, we didn't get any support from you.
That's because I didn't think we had any grounds for his dismissal.
Reverend, around here, it caused a lot of folks some worry.
Well, a lot of folks worry a little too much.
Doesn't take much time for corruption to take root, Reverend.
How long is that, Roger? About as long as it takes compassion to die.
Books represent humanity as it at its best and its worst.
To burn books is simply a fundamental repression of ideas.
I mean, what can a book do, and why is it so dangerous that it needs to be physically annihilated?
Thank heavens you're here. People are calling. They're over at the library.
Roger! Eleanor, what are you doing?
We decided these books are influenced.
Well, who's we? Who's the authority? You have
to. You yourself agree that this is garbage.
Wait a minute, all everybody, listen to me. When did you all decide to sit in judgment? Who elected all of you to be the saviors of everybody's souls in Beaumont?
Reverend, we have a perfect right to determine what
Roger,
our children...
When you burned all of these, what are you going to do then? Chris, take these out of here. Satan is not in these books. He's in here. He's in your hearts. Go on home, all of you. Go and sit in judgment on yourselves. Roger, go home. Eleanor, come on. Go home now. Come on, both of you.
Fahrenheit 451, to the temperature at which book paper catches fire and burns.
Hello?
Hello. You're our new neighbor, aren't you?
Yes. And you must be the fireman.
How did you know?
Well, the salamander on your arm and the phoenix disc on your chest.
I see.
Oh, well, I'd have known it with my eyes shut.
What? The smell of the kerosene? And my wife always complains. You never wash it off completely.
No, you don't.
Kerosene is nothing but perfume to me.
Does it seem like that? Really?
Of course. Why not?
I don't know. Do you mind if I walk back with you? I'm Clarice McClellan.
Clarice? Guy Montag. Come on along. What are you doing out so late, wandering around? How old are you?
Well, I'm 17, and I'm crazy. My uncle says the two always go together. When people ask your age, always say 17 and insane. Isn't it a nice time of night to walk? I like to smell things and look at things. And sometimes I stay up all night, walking and watching the sunrise. You know, I'm not afraid of you at all.
Why should you be?
Well, so many people are. Afraid of firemen, I mean. But you're just a man, after all. Do you mind if I ask? How long have you been a fireman?
Oh, since I was 20. 10 years ago.
Do you ever read any of the books you burn?
No, that's against the law.
Oh, of course.
Well, it's fine work. Monday, burn Millet. Wednesday, Whitman. Friday, Faulkner. Burn them to ashes, then burn the ashes. That's our official slogan.
Is it true that long ago firemen put fires out instead of going to start them?
No. No, houses have always been fireproof. Take my word for it.
Strange. I heard once that long time ago, houses used to burn by accident, and they needed firemen to stop the flames. Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Why?
Well, you laugh when I haven't been funny, and you answer right off. You never stop to think what I ask you.
You are an odd one. Haven't you any respect?
Have you ever watched the jet cars racing on the boulevards down that way?
You're changing the subject.
I sometimes think drivers don't know what grass is, or flowers, because they never see them slowly. If you showed a driver a green blur, oh yes, he'd say, that's grass. A pink blur, that's a rose garden. White blurs are houses. Brown blurs are cows. My uncle drove slowly on a highway once. He drove 40 miles an hour, and they jailed him for 2 days. Isn't that funny? And sad, too.
You think too many things.
Well, I rarely watch the parlor walls or go to the races or fun parks. Though I guess I have lots of time for crazy thoughts. Have you seen the 200-foot-long billboards in the country beyond town? Did you know that once billboards were 20 feet long? But the cars started rushing by so quickly that they had to stretch the advertising out so that it would last.
Huh. I never thought of that.
I bet I know something else you don't know. There's dew on the grass in the morning. And if you look, there's a man in the moon. Well, this is my house.
Yes. What's going on? Why are all those lights on?
Oh, it's just my parents and my uncle sitting around talking. It's like being a pedestrian, only rarer. My uncle was arrested another time, did I tell you? For being a pedestrian. Oh, we're most peculiar.
Your uncle must be a remarkable man.
Oh, he is. He certainly is. Well, good night. Are you happy?
Am I what? Mildred!
Yeah, you've got to clean them out both ways. No use getting the stomach if you don't clean the blood. Leave that stuff in the blood, and the blood hits the brain like a mallet. Bang! A couple of thousand times, and the brain just gives up, just quits.
Stop it.
I was just saying.
Are you done?
Yep. That's $50.
Well, first, why don't you tell me if she'll be all right?
Sure, she'll be okay.
You're not an M.D. Why didn't they send an M.D. from emergency?
Hell, we get these suicides 9 or 10 a night. Got so many, starting a few years ago, we had these official machines built. Pump them out, and that's it. You don't need an M.D. in a case like this. All you need is 2 handymen. Clear up the problem in half an hour.
Look, we gotta go. Just had another call on the old ear thimble. 10 blocks from here. Call us if you need us again. Keep her quiet. We got a contraceptive in her, and she'll wake up hungry. So long.
Clarice, Mildred, the uncle, the fire, the tablets. I don't know anything anymore.
I don't know why I should be so hungry.
You...
I'm hungry.
Last night...
What about last night?
Don't you remember?
What? Did we have a wild party or something?
Oh, I feel like a hangover.
You took all the pills in your bottle last night.
I wouldn't do a thing like that. Why would I do a thing like that?
I don't know.
I didn't do that. Never in a billion years.
All right, if you say so. What's on this afternoon?
Well, a play comes on the wall-to-wall circuit in 10 minutes. They mailed me my part this morning. I sent in some box tops. They write the script with one part missing. It's a new idea. The homemaker, that's me, is the missing part. When it comes time for the missing lines, they all look at me out of the three walls and I say the lines. Here, for instance, the man says, "What do you think of this whole idea, Helen?" And he looks at me sitting here center stage, see? And I say, "I think that's fine." And then they all go on with the play until he says, "Do you agree to that, Helen?" And I say, "I sure do." Isn't that fun, Guy?
What's the play about?
Well, I just told you. There are these people named Bob and Ruth and Helen.
Oh.
It's really fun. It'll be even more fun when we can afford to have the fourth wall installed. How long you figure before we save up and get the fourth wall torn out and the fourth wall TV put in? It's only $2,000.
Well, that's one third of my yearly pay.
It's only $2,000. Oh, we could do without a few things.
We're already doing without a few things to pay for the third wall. We put it in only 2 months ago, remember?
Is that all it was? Well, goodbye, dear.
Goodbye. Does it have a happy ending?
I haven't read that far.
Montag?
It doesn't like me.
What? The hound? Come off it. It doesn't like or dislike. It just functions. It's like a lesson in ballistics. It has a trajectory we decide on for it. It follows through. It targets itself, homes itself, and cuts off. It's only copper wire, storage, batteries, and electricity.
Its calculators can be set to any combination. So many amino acids, so much sulfur, so much butterfat and alkaline, right?
We all know that.
Well, all of these chemical balances and percentages on all of us here are recorded in the master file downstairs. It would be easy for someone to set up a partial combination on the hound's memory. A touch of amino acids, perhaps.
Hell, who would do a thing like that? You haven't any enemies here, Montag?
None that I know of.
We'll have the hound checked by our technicians tomorrow.
This isn't the first time it's threatened me. Last month it happened twice.
You got a guilty conscience about something?
I have been thinking. About the fire last week. About the man whose library we fixed. What happened to him?
They took him screaming off to the asylum.
He wasn't insane?
Any man's insane who thinks he can fool the government and us.
Was it always like this? The firehouse, our work... I mean, well, once upon a time.
Once upon a time? What kind of talk is that?
I mean, in the old days, before homes were completely fireproofed. Didn't firemen prevent fires rather than stoke them up and get them going?
That's rich. Here, you know the rule book in the history of firemen of America, don't you? Established 1790 to burn English-influenced books in the colonies. First fireman Benjamin Franklin. Rule one, answer the alarm quickly. Rule two, start the fire swiftly. Rule three, burn everything. Rule four, report back to firehouse immediately. Rule five, stand alert for other alarms. Montag, you forgot your helmet. Okay, where are they?
Play the man, Master Ridley.
We shall this day light such a candle by God's grace in England as I trust shall never be put out.
Enough of that. Where are they?
You know where they are, or you wouldn't be here.
Okay, you're right. Here's the card. Have reason to suspect attic, number 11, Elm City, EB.
That should be Mrs. Blake, my neighbor.
All right, men. Let's get them. Here they come, tumbling down.
Like to read this?
Time has fallen asleep in the afternoon sunshine.
Montag, up here.
Time has fallen...
Montag, don't stand there, idiot. Kerosene. Come on, woman.
You can't have my books.
You know the law. Where's your common sense? None of those books agree with each other. You've been locked up here for years with a regular Tower of Babel. Snap out of it. The people in those books never lived. Come on now.
No.
The whole house is going up. Okay.
You're not leaving her here.
She won't come.
Well, force her then.
We're due back at the house. Besides, these fanatics always try suicide. The pattern's familiar.
You can come with me.
No. No. Thank you, anyway.
I'm counting to 10. 1. 2.
Go on while
3,
you can.
4.
Please come.
5.
I want to stay
6,
here. 6. You can stop counting. I have my own matches.
Let's go. Let's go, Montag.
Master Ridley.
What?
She said, Master Ridley. She said some crazy thing when we came in the door. Play the man, she said. Master Ridley, something, something, something.
A man named Latimer said that to a man named Nicholas Ridley as they were being burnt alive at Oxford for heresy on October 16, 1555. I'm full of bits and pieces. Most fire captains have to be. Watch it, Stoneman! Damn, you've gone right by our turn.
Millie?
What?
I didn't mean to wake you. What I want to know is...
Well?
When did we meet?
When did we meet for what?
I mean originally. The first time we ever met. Where was it and when?
Oh, it was at... I don't know.
Can't you remember?
Well, it's been so long.
Only 10 years, that's all. Only 10.
Well, don't get excited. I'm trying to think. Funny. How funny not to remember where or when you met your husband or wife.
Mildred, do you know that girl I was telling you about?
What girl?
The girl next door.
What girl next door?
You know, the high school girl. Clarice, her name is.
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen her for a few days. Have you seen her?
No.
I meant to talk to you about her. Strange.
Oh, I know the one you mean. I meant to tell you. Forgot.
What is it?
I think she's gone.
Gone?
The whole family moved out somewhere. But she's gone for good. I think she's dead.
No, we couldn't be talking about the same girl.
No, the same girl. McClellan. McClellan. Run over by a car 4 days ago. I'm not sure. But I think she's dead. The family moved out anyway. I don't know. But I think she's dead.
You're not sure of it?
No, not sure. Pretty sure.
Why didn't you tell me sooner?
Forgot.
4 days ago?
I forgot all about it.
4 days ago.
Good night. You can't be sick.
I've got the chills. Fever, I think. Will you bring me aspirin and water?
You've got to get up. It's noon. You slept 5 hours later than usual.
What about the aspirin?
You've never been sick before.
Oh, I'm sick now. I'm not going to work tonight. Call Captain Beatty for me.
You acted funny last night. Did something happen?
Fire, that's all.
Oh.
We burned an old woman with her books.
Well? You don't expect me to call Captain Beatty, do you?
You must.
Don't shout.
I wasn't shouting. I can't call him. I can't tell him I'm sick.
Why?
Mildred, how would it be if... Well, maybe I quit my job a while.
You want to give up everything? After all these years of working, because one night some woman and her books...
You weren't there. You didn't see. There must be something in books. Things we can't imagine to make a woman stay in a burning house. There must be something there. You don't stay for nothing.
She was simple-minded.
You ever see a burned house? It smolders for days. Well, this fire will last me the rest of my life. God, I've been trying to put it out in my mind all night. I'm crazy with trying.
You should have thought of that before becoming a fireman.
Thought? Was I given a choice? My grandfather and father were firemen. In my sleep, I ran after them.
This is the day you go on the early shift. You should have gone 2 hours ago. I just noticed.
It's not just the woman that died. Last night, I thought about all the kerosene I've used in the past 10 years. And I thought about books. A man had to think them up. A man had to take a long time to put them down on paper. And I'd never even thought of that before.
Let me alone. I didn't do anything.
Let you alone?
Oh, well,
that's now, all very
you
well, but
got
how
it.
Can I leave myself
outside
alone?
Of the house. Look, who's there?
I don't care.
There's a Phoenix car just drove up, and a man in a black shirt with an orange snake stitched on his arm coming up the front walk.
Captain Beatty?
I'm going to watch the family in a few minutes.
Let him in, will you? Tell him I'm sick.
Tell him yourself.
Just thought I'd come by and see how the sick man is.
How did you know?
Well, I've seen it all. You're going to call for a night off. But take the night off. When will you be well?
Tomorrow. The next day, maybe. First of the week.
Every fireman sooner or later hits this. They only need understanding to know how the wheels run. Need to know the history of our profession. They don't feed it to rookies like they used to. Damn shame. I'll let you in on it. When did it all start, you ask, this job of ours? How did it come about? Where? When? Well, I'd say it really got started around about a thing called the Civil War, even though our rule book claims it was founded earlier. The fact is, we didn't get along well until photography came into its own. Then motion pictures in the early 20th century. Radio, television, things began to have mass. And because they had mass, they became simpler. Classics cut to fit 15-minute radio shows, then cut again to fill a 2-minute book column, winding up at last as a 10 or 12-line dictionary resume. School is shortened. Discipline relaxed. Life is immediate. The job counts. Pleasure lies all about after work. Why learn anything save pressing buttons, pulling switches, fitting nuts and bolts?
Let me fix your pillow.
No. The zipper displaces the button, and a man lacks just that much time to think while dressing at dawn. A philosophical hour, and thus a melancholy hour. You like bowling, don't you, Montag?
Bowling? Yes.
And golf?
Golf is a fine game.
Basketball, billiards, football, hockey?
Fine games, all of them.
More sports for everyone. Group spirit, fun. And you don't have to think, eh? Organize and organize and super organize super sports, eh?
Here, let me...
Get away.
Life becomes one big pratfall, Montag. Everything bang, boff, and wow.
Wow.
For God's sake, let me be.
What's this here?
Now sit down. We're talking. Isn't the family on yet?
Okay. Okay, guys.
Now, let's take up the minorities in our civilization, shall we? Bigger the population, the more minorities. Don't step on the toes of the dog lovers, the cat lovers, doctors, lawyers, merchants, chiefs, Mormons, Baptists, second-generation Chinese, Swedes, Italians, people from Oregon, people from Mexico. The people in this book, this play, this TV serial are not meant to represent any actual painters, cartographers, mechanics, anywhere. The bigger your market, Montag, the less you handle controversy. Remember that. All the minor minorities with their navels to be kept clean. Authors full of evil thoughts, lock up your typewriters. They did. Magazines became a nice blend of vanilla tapioca. It didn't come from the government down. There was no dictum, no declaration, no censorship to start with, no. Technology, mass exploitation, and minority pressure carried the trick, thank God.
Yes, but what about the firemen then?
Ah. What more easily explained and natural? With school, turning out more runners, jumpers, racers, grabbers, snatchers, and flyers, instead of examiners, critics, knowers, and imaginative creators, the word intellectual, of course, became the swear word it deserved to be. You always dread the unfamiliar. Surely you remember the boy in your own school class who was exceptionally bright. Did most of the reciting and answering while the others sat like so many leaden idols, hating him. And wasn't it this bright boy you selected for beatings and tortures after hours? Of course it was. We must all be alike. Not everyone born free and equal, as the Constitution says, but everyone made equal. Each man the image of every other. Then all are happy, for there are no mountains to make them cower, to judge themselves against. So, a book is a loaded gun in the house next door. Burn it. Take the shot from the weapon. Breach man's mind. Who knows who might be the target of the well-read man? Me? I won't stomach them for a minute. And so, when houses were finally fireproofed completely all over the world, there was no longer need of firemen for the old purposes. They were given the new job as custodians of our peace of mind, the focus of our understandable and rightful dread of being inferior. Official censors, judges, and executors. That's you, Montag, and that's me.
I see.
You see, colored people don't like Little Black Sambo. Burn it. White people don't feel good about Uncle Tom's Cabin. Burn it. Someone's written a book on tobacco and cancer of the lungs. The cigarette people are weeping. Burn the book. Serenity, Montag. Peace, Montag. Take your fight outside. Better yet, into the incinerator. 10 minutes after death, a man's a speck of black dust. Burn all. Burn everything. Fire is bright and fire is clean.
There was a girl next door. She's gone now, I think. Dead. I can't even remember her face. But she was different. How did she happen?
The girl? She was a time bomb. She didn't want to know how a thing was done, but why. Well, that can be embarrassing. You ask why to a lot of things, and you wind up very unhappy indeed, if you keep at it. The poor girl's better off dead.
She is dead, then.
Look, I must be going. Lecture's over. I hope I've clarified things. The important thing, Montag, is we're the happiness boys. The Dixie duo, you and I and the others. We stand against the small tide of those who want to make everyone unhappy with conflicting theory and thought. We have our fingers in the dike. Hold steady. Don't let the torrent of melancholy and drear philosophy drown our world. We depend on you. I don't think you realize how important you are. We are to our happy world as it stands now.
Yes.
Oh, one last thing, Montag. At least once in his career, every fireman gets an itch. What do the books say, he wonders. Oh, to scratch that itch, eh? Well, Montag, take my word for it. I've had to read a few in my time to know what I was about, and the books say nothing. Nothing you can teach or believe. They're about non-existent people, figments of imagination if they're fiction, and if they're non-fiction, it's worse. One professor calling another an idiot, one philosopher screaming down another's gullet. All of them running about, putting out the stars and extinguishing the sun. You come away lost.
Well, then, what if a fireman accidentally, really not intending anything, takes a book home with him?
A natural error. Curiosity alone. We don't get over-anxious or mad. We let the fireman keep the book 24 hours. If he hasn't burned it by then, we simply come and burn it for him.
Yeah, of course.
Well, Montag, will you take another later shift today? Will we see you tonight, perhaps?
I don't know.
What?
I'll be in later. Millie, I have something I want you to see. Something I've put away and hid during the past year. Now and again, once in a while. Now, I didn't know why, but I did it, and I never told you.
Guy!
Yes, I hid them up here behind the grill of the air conditioning system.
Guy! Guy! die.
No, Millie, no, no, now wait. Stop it, will you? Oh, you don't know, now stop it.
Oh, God. I know.
Millie, listen. Give me a second, will you? We can't do anything. We can't burn these. I want to look at them. At least look at them once. Then, if what the captain says is true, we'll burn them together. You must help me. We've got to start somewhere here, figuring out why we're in such a mess. We're heading right for the cliffs, Millie. God, I don't want to go over. Now, this isn't going to be easy. We haven't anything to go on. But maybe we can piece it out and figure it and help each other. I need you so much right now, I can't tell you. If you love me at all, you'll put up with this 24, 48 hours. That's all I ask. Then it'll be over. I promise. I swear. And if there is something here, just one little thing out of the whole mess of things, maybe we can pass it on to someone else.
Oh, God.
Oh, that woman the other night, Millie, you weren't there. You didn't see her face. And Clarice, you never talked to her. I talked to her. And men like Beatty are afraid of her. I can't understand it. Why should they be so afraid of someone like her?
God, listen. Outside.
Oh, it can't be him. He's come back. We won't answer.
He'll come in and burn us and the books. God. He's gone. Whoever it was, he's gone.
Yes. Now, let's see what this says.
No, Guy. I don't want to hear.
It is computed that 11,000 persons have at several times suffered death rather than submit to break their eggs at the smaller end.
Oh, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. The captain was right. That guy. Someone at the door. Oh. It's only a dog, that's what. Do you want me to shoo him away?
Let him stay where you are.
He's gone. Let's get back to work.
Damn it, don't kick those books around.
Books aren't people. My family on the parlor wall, they're people. They tell me things. I laugh, they laugh. And the colors.
Yes, I know.
And besides, if Captain Beatty knew about these books, he might come and burn the house and the family. That's awful. Think of our investment. Well, why should I read? What for? Howard?
Yes, Howard.
Hello? Anne. Oh, Anne, how are you? Oh, yes. Yes, the White Clown's on tonight.
Stand up. You have the time sitting on a park bench.
Yes.
How?
Well, I'm a retired English professor. 40 years ago, my college, last liberal arts college, was shut down for lack of students.
Why did you start running when you saw us?
I was afraid.
That's a book you have under your coat. A book of poetry, isn't it?
I don't tell things, sir. I tell the meaning of things. I sit here and I know that I'm alive.
How many copies of the Bible are left in this country?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I want to know if there are any copies left at all.
Is this some sort of trap?
How many copies of Shakespeare and Plato?
None. You know as well as I do, none.
All right, Professor. Your address?
Here. My address. For your file.
Millie, look. This is the Old and New Testament.
Don't start that again.
That might be the last copy in this part of the world.
You've got to hand it back tonight, don't you? Captain Beatty knows you've got it, doesn't he?
He doesn't know which book I stole. How do I choose a substitute? Do I turn in Jefferson, Thoreau, and which is least valuable?
If I pick a substitute and Beatty does know which book I stole, he'll guess we have an entire library here.
See what you're doing? You'll ruin us. Who's more important, me or the Bible?
Sit down, Monte. Watch. Delicately, like the petals of a flower. Light the first page. Light the second page. Each becomes a black butterfly. Beautiful, eh? Light the third page from the second. And so on. Chain smoking. Chapter by chapter. All the silly things the words mean. All the false promises. All the second-hand notions and time-worn philosophy. Hey.
There's only one thing to do. Sometime before tonight when I give the book to Beatty, I've got to have a duplicate made.
You'll be here for the White Clown tonight, and the lady's coming over.
Millie?
What?
Millie, does the White Clown love you? Millie, does the family love you? Love you very much? Love you with all their heart and soul, Millie?
Why do you ask a silly question like that? If you see that dog outside, give him a kick for me.
Who is it?
Fireman Montag out here. What do you want? Let me in.
I haven't done anything.
I'm alone, damn it.
You swear it?
I swear it.
I'm sorry. One has to be careful. That book, where did you get it?
I stole it.
You're brave.
No. My wife's dying. A friend of mine's already dead. Someone who may have been a friend was burnt less than 24 hours ago. You're the only one I knew might help me.
May I? It's been a long time. I'm not a religious man, but it's been a long time.
Yes, it's as good as I remember.
Lord, how they've changed in our parlor these days. Christ is one of the family now. We often wonder if God recognizes his own son the way we've dressed him up. He's a regular peppermint stick now, all sugar, crystal, and saccharine when he isn't making veiled references to certain commercial products that every worshipper absolutely needs. Do you know, books smell like nutmeg or some spice from a foreign land? I loved to smell them when I was a little boy. Lord, there were a lot of lovely books once. Before we let them go. Mr. Mandag, you are looking at a coward. I saw the way things were going a long time back. I said nothing. Now it's too late. Well, suppose you tell me why you came here. Nobody listens anymore. I can't talk to the walls because they're yelling at me. I can't talk to my wife. She listens to the walls. I just want someone to hear what I have to say. And maybe if I talk long enough, it'll make sense. And I want you to teach me to understand what I read. How did you get shaken up? What knocked the torch out of your hands? I don't know. We have everything we need to be happy, but we aren't happy. Something's missing. I looked around. The only thing I positively knew was gone was the books I'd burned in 10, 12 years. So I thought books might help. You're a hopeless romantic. It would be fun if it were not so serious. It's not books you need. It's some of the things that once were in books. The same things could be in the parlor families today. The same infinite detail and awareness could be projected through the radio and televisors, but they're not. No, it's not books at all that you're looking for. You take it where you can find it. The old phonograph records, old motion pictures, and old friends. Look for it in nature, and look for it in yourself. This afternoon I thought that if it turned out that books were worthwhile, we might get a press and print some extra copies. We?
you and I.
Oh, no.
But let me tell you my plan.
If you insist on telling me, I must ask you to leave.
No, but aren't you interested?
Not if you start talking the sort of talk that might get me burnt for my trouble. Now, if you were to suggest that we print extra books and arrange to have them hidden in firemen's houses all over the country so that seeds of suspicion would be sown among these arsonists, bravo, I'd say.
Plant the books. Turn in an alarm and see the firemen's houses burn. Is that what you mean?
I was only joking.
If you thought it would be a plan worth trying, I'd have to take your word. It would help. Well?
You're absolutely serious?
Absolutely.
It's an insidious plan. The salamander devours his tail. Oh, God.
Now, I have a list of firemen's residences everywhere. With some sort of underground...
Just people. That's the dirty part. You and I, and who else will set the fires,
Well, aren't there professors like yourself, former writers, historians, linguists?
But that would just nibble the edges. Can you dance faster than the white clown, shout louder than Mr. Gimmick and the parlor families? If you can, you'll win your way, Montag. In any event, you're a fool. People are having fun.
Then you don't care anymore.
I care so much, I'm sick.
And you won't help me.
I'm too tired. Good night.
Would you like to own this Bible?
Stop! Stop! I give my right arm. All right, what do you want?
I need you to teach me.
All right, all right.
I've tried to remember things. I've been learning verses from a book called Ecclesiastes. But hell, they're gone when I turn my head. God, how I want something to say to the captain. He's read enough so he has all the answers, or he seems to have. His voice is like butter. I'm afraid he'll talk me back the way I was. Only a week ago, pumping a kerosene hose, I thought, God, this really is fun.
Those who don't build must burn. As old as history and juvenile delinquency. Montag.
Yes?
What's this? I've had this little item ready for months, but I almost let it go. I was so afraid.
It looks like a seashell radio.
And something more. It listens. Now, if you put it into your ear, Montag, I can sit comfortably at home, warming my frightened bones, and hear and analyze the fireman's world, find its weaknesses without danger. I'm the queen bee, safe in the hive. You will be the drone, the traveling ear. You will be Montag plus Faber, fire plus water. Then, one day, after everything is mixed and simmered and worked away in silences, there will be neither fire nor water. But wine. Go ahead. Put it into your ear.
Montag.
I hear you.
Go to the firehouse when it's time. I'll be with you. And you'll take us both in. And you'll try to judge these things and make your decision which way to jump or fall. But make it your decision, not mine and not the captain's. But remember that the captain belongs to the most dangerous enemy of truth and freedom. The solid, unmoving cattle of the majority. God, the terrible tyranny of the majority.
Good night, Professor.
Not good night. I'll be with you the rest of the night. Vinegar gnat tickling your ear when you need me. But good night. Good luck anyway.
Well, here comes a very strange beast, which in all tongues is called a fool. Give me the book. That's a good place for it, the trash can. Well, the crisis is past and all is well. The sheep returns to the fold. We're all sheep who've strayed at times. Truth is truth to the end of reckoning, we've cried. They're never alone that are accompanied with noble thoughts, we've shouted to ourselves. Sweet food of sweetly uttered knowledge, Sir Philip Sidney said. But on the other hand, Words are like leaves, and where they most abound, much fruit of sense beneath is rarely found, Alexander Pope. What do you think of that, Montag?
I don't know.
Careful.
Oh, this. A little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pyrian spring. Their shallow drops intoxicate the brain, and drinking largely sobers us again. Pope, same essay. Where does that put you? I'll tell you. That made you for a little while a drunkard. Read a few lines and off you go over the cliff. Bang, you're ready to blow up the world, chop off heads, knock down women and children, destroy authority. I know, I've been through it all.
I'm all right.
He's trying to confuse you. He's slippery, watch out.
Well, you come back just in time, Montag. Now, let's see where we're off to. So, Montag doesn't look well. I'd hate to think he was coming down with another fever.
I'll be all right.
Oh, this is a special case. Hey, come on, jump for it. What is there about fire that's so lovely? No matter what age we are, what draws us to it? It's perpetual motion, the thing man wanted to invent but never did. If you let it go on, it'd burn our lifetimes out. Something the matter, Montag?
Why, we've stopped in front of my house. Mildred. Mildred, wait. Mildred, come back!
Stay where you are, Montag.
Montag, this is Faber. Do you hear me? What's happening?
This is happening to me.
What a dreadful surprise. For everyone nowadays knows absolutely as certain that nothing will ever happen to him. Others die, he goes on. There are no consequences and no responsibilities, except that there are, but let's not talk about him, eh? By the time the consequences catch up with you, it's too late, isn't it, Montag?
Montag, can you get away? Run?
What is fire? It's a mystery. Scientists give us gobbledygook about friction and molecules, but they don't really know. Its real beauty is that it destroys responsibility and consequences. A problem gets too burdensome, then into the furnace with it. Now, Montag, you're a burden. And fire will lift you up my shoulders, clean, quick, sure, nothing to rot later. Antibiotic, aesthetic, practical.
Mildred.
Yes, Mildred. I want you to do this job all by your lonesome, Montag. Not with kerosene in a match, but piecework. With a flamethrower. Your house, your cleanup.
Montag, can't you run, get away?
No, the hound.
Yeah, the hound's somewhere about the neighborhood, so don't try anything. Ready? Ready? Fire.
Montag!
When you're quite finished, you're under arrest. Hey, what's this?
Wow.
Ooh. Well, a little green bullet, and it came out of your ear. Well, so there's more here than I thought. I saw you tilt your head, listening. Yeah, well, we'll drop this on your friend.
No.
Well, that's one way to get an audience. Hold a gun on a man and force him to listen to your speech. Speech away. What'll it be this time? Why don't you belt Shakespeare at me, you fumbling snob? There is no terror, Cassius, in your threats, for I am armed so strong in honesty that they pass by me as an idle wind which I respect not. How's that? Go ahead now, you second-hand literateur. Pull the trigger.
We never burn right.
Hand it over, Montag. Hand over the flamethrower.
Police alert. Wanted fugitive in city. Has committed murder and crime against the state. Name, Montag. Occupation, fireman. Last seen. Watch for a man running. Watch for the running man. Watch for a man alone, on foot. Watch.
Faber, I've been a fool all down the line. I can't stay long. I'm on my way, God knows where.
You two were a fool about the right things. I thought you were dead. The audio capsule I gave you.
No, it's burnt.
I heard the captain talking to you, and suddenly there was nothing.
Well, the captain's dead. I killed him with a flamethrower. My God, how did this happen? It was only the other night everything was fine, and the next thing I know, I'm drowning. How many times can a man go down and still be alive? I can't breathe. There's Beatty dead, and he was my friend once. And there's Millie gone, and I thought she was my wife, but now I don't know. And the house all burnt. And my job gone, and myself on the run. And I planted a book in a fireman's house on the way. Good Christ, the things I've done in a single week.
You did what you had to do. It was coming on for a long time.
Yes, I believe that.
If there's nothing else in this, I honestly believe that. It's as if I was saving something up. I went round doing one thing and feeling another. God, it was all there. It's a wonder it didn't show on me like that.
What are your plans?
To keep running.
You know that the war's on.
Yes, I heard. God, isn't it funny? It seems so remote because we have our own troubles. I haven't had time to think. I want this $100 to stay with you. Use it in any way that'll help when I'm gone.
Yes, but I
might be dead by noon. Use this.
Now, look. You'd better head for the river if you can. Follow along it. And if you can, hit the old railroad line going out into the country and follow them. I've heard there are still hobo camps all across the country here and there. Walking camps, they call them. If you keep walking far enough and keep an eye peeled, they say there's lots of old Harvard degrees on the tracks between here and Los Angeles. Most of them are wanted and hunted in the cities. And they survive, I guess. I guess the governments never consider them a great enough danger to go in and track them down. Now, you might hold up with them for a while. I'm leaving on the 5 a.m. bus to St. Louis this morning myself. I'm getting out into the open for good. This money will be put to good use.
I'd better run. I'm sorry about this.
About what? Me? My house? I deserve everything. Now, run, for God's sake. Perhaps I can delay them here.
No, wait. There's no use you being discovered. When I leave, burn the spread of this bed that I touched. Burn the chair in the living room, in your wall incinerator. Wipe down the furniture with alcohol. Wipe the doorknobs. Burn the throw rug in the parlor. Turn on the air conditioning on full in all the rooms, and spray with moth spray if you have it. Then turn on your lawn sprinklers as high as they'll go and hose off the sidewalks. With any luck at all, we can kill the trail in here anyway.
I'll tend to it. Good luck.
One last thing. Quick. A suitcase. Get it. Fill it with your dirtiest clothes. An old suit. The dirtier the better. A shirt. Some old sneakers and socks. And some whiskey. Douse the suitcase with whiskey.
To keep the ancient odors of Mr. Faber in, of course.
Now, we don't want that hound picking up two odors at once. May I take this whiskey? I'll need it later. And goodbye.
Police suggest the entire population in the Elm Terrace area do as follows. Everyone in every house, in every street, open a front or rear door or look from the window. The fugitive cannot escape if everyone in the next minute looks from his house. Ready? At the count of ten now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You're welcome here, Montague. My name's Granger.
You know my name.
We've watched the chase on TV. Figured you'd wind up south along the river. When we heard you plunging around out in the forest like a drunken elk, we didn't hide as we usually do. We figured you were in the river when the helicopter camera swung back in over the city. Welcome back from the dead. You might as well know all of us now. This is Fred Clement, former occupant of the Thomas Hardy chair at Cambridge in the years before it became an atomic engineering school. This other is Dr. Simmons from UCLA, specialist in Oriental philosophy. Reverend Padover here gave a few lectures 30 years ago and lost his flock between one Sunday and the next for his views. Myself, I wrote a book called The Fingers in the Glove, The Proper Relationship Between the Individual and Society. Welcome, Montague. Welcome here in the woods. Welcome here by the fire.
I don't belong with you. I've been an idiot all the way.
Yeah, we're used to that. You want to join us, Montague?
Yes.
What have you to offer?
Nothing. I thought I had part of the book of Ecclesiastes and maybe a little of Revelation, but I haven't even that now.
Well, the book of Ecclesiastes would be fine. Where was it?
Here. In my head. What's wrong? Isn't that all right?
All right. I want you to meet Jonathan Swift, the author of that evil political book, Gulliver's Travels. This is Schopenhauer. And this one here at my elbow is Mr. Albert Schweitzer. Here we all are, Montague. Aristophanes and Confucius and Thomas Love Peacock and Thomas Jefferson.
We also have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're book burners, too. We read the books, memorized, then burnt them. Well, microfilming didn't pay off. We're always traveling. We didn't want to bury the film and come back later. Always the chance of discovery. Better to keep it in the old head where no one can see it. There were bums on the outside, libraries inside. But don't judge a book by its cover. Right now, we have a horrible job. We're waiting for the war to begin and as quickly end. It's not pleasant, but and we're not in control. We're the odd minority crying in the wilderness. When the war is over, perhaps we can be of some use in the world. Look. Listen. It began. The war. It began.
It's flat. From here, the city looks like a heap of baking powder. It's gone.
Phoenix.
What?
Now, there was a silly damn bird called a phoenix back before Christ. Every few hundred years, he built a pyre and burnt himself up. He must have been first cousin to man. But every time he burnt himself up, he sprang out of the ashes. He got himself born all over again. And it looks like we're doing the same thing. Oh, and over. But we've got one damn thing the phoenix never had. We know that damn silly thing we just did. We know all the damn silly things we've done for 1,000 years. So we pick up a few more people that remember every generation. Well, now let's get on upstream, Montag. And hold on to one thought. We're not important. We're not anything. But someday, the load we're carrying with us might help someone. Our job is just to remember. And that's where we'll win in the long run. And someday, we'll remember so much that we'll build the biggest damn steam shovel in history and dig the biggest grave of all time and shove war in and cover it up. But come on now. We're going to go and build a mirror factory first and put out nothing but mirrors for the next year. I take a long look in them.
And he showed me a pure river of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb.
And on either side
of the river
was there a tree of life
which bore 12 manner of fruits and yielded her fruit every month,
and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations.
CBC Stage has presented Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 in adaptation by Otto Lowy. In the cast, Neil Daynard played Montauk. Ellen Scarfe played the fire captain. With Linda Sorensen, Sharon Kirk, Peter Haworth, Dorothy Davies, Merv Camponi, Derek Ralston, and Annie Scarfe. Sound, Lars Eastholm. Technical, Bob Spence. Fahrenheit 451 was produced by the CBC in Vancouver under the direction of Don Mowat.
There's so much that can be said in regards to this story and the ideas and the thoughts that it brings out. But I'm not going to spend too much time going over it. I do have a few thoughts, but I really do think the story speaks for itself and the ideas are expressed very well therein. One of the things that caught my mind as I re-listened to this was the one quote by the fire chief where he said that all people are not created equal as it states in the Constitution, but they will be made equal. And I think that that is a danger in our society now, as well as in the society that Bradbury depicts in this story. The society seems to be trying to make everybody the same, make everybody mediocre, mindless, just focused on the superficial things of life. And I definitely see that today in society. I don't see a lot of books being burned and things like that, but I do see a lot of people trying to make everybody the same and there shouldn't be any winners, shouldn't be any losers. Everybody should just be treated the same and not be encouraged to achieve higher. But I wanted to share something else with you. I received an email from Jack Collins not too long ago, and he knew, I guess, by listening to the podcast or seeing things that I had posted, that I was definitely interested in Ray Bradbury, and I liked Ray Bradbury's work. And he's associated somehow, either as a contributor or as a student, I'm not sure, but there's a website called academicearth.org, and there's a lot of really neat online things that you can look up. And one of the things they have is, they call them video electives. And he pointed me to one of these video electives on Fahrenheit 451. And it's a really interesting piece, and I encourage you to go to academicearth.org and check that out. That is very well done, very creative. It kind of gives you a visual representation of what they're talking about and kind of helps clarify some of the ideas. And it's really neat to watch. I will put a link to the show notes in it, but I'm going to play the audio for you. Now that you've just listened to the story, if you hadn't heard Fahrenheit 451, or even if you hadn't heard it in a while, you've just listened to the radio play of it. And now this is a brief synopsis. It's about 2.5 minutes long, and it goes through the basic plot and the themes and the characters, and it does a really great job of putting it all together. So here we go.
Fahrenheit 451. Fahrenheit 451 is set in a homogenous, futuristic, war-obsessed America where books are outlawed, intellectualism scorned, and the entire population exists in a state of dull pleasure and sensory overload. Ring any bells? Guy Montag, the main character, is an impressionable fireman. His job is to burn books which have been denounced as emotionally upsetting and subversive. Montag starts to question his actions after meeting an inquisitive young woman, even going so far as to steal a book from a house as he burns it down. Montag becomes steadily more aware of his miserable life and resolves to take action against the conformist ruling society. With the help of a former English professor, Montag learns that books allow for self-examination and independent thought. Montag is then caught with the stolen books and must become a fugitive. After a harrowing chase, Montag escapes and joins up with a group of roving intellectuals in the countryside. They watch as enemy planes bomb the city, and the group resolves to construct a new, better civilization. Major characters. Not everyone born free and equal, as the Constitution says, but everyone made equal. Montag. Guy Montag is a firefighter, and the book plots his movement from mindless drone to free-thinking book lover. He struggles with independent thought and is often swayed by people's rhetoric, making him something of an archetypal citizen in Bradbury's dystopian future. Beatty. The fire chief, Beatty, is brilliant and very persuasive. He is well-read and can quote famous literary works at will, but he finds the written word dangerous and upsetting. He represents the more fanatical side of censorship. Faber. Faber is a former English professor who is Montag's intellectual mentor. Faber teaches Montag that knowledge and reason are the true paths to a more fulfilling life. Themes, motifs, and symbols. If you hide your ignorance, no one will hit you and you'll never learn. Fire. Fire destroys contraband, but it also entertains and delights people. Montag notices that almost all fires are at night, when they will look prettier. Eventually, Montag comes to view fire as a tool not just for destruction or entertainment, but for sustenance as well. Mirrors. Clarice, the young woman, is described as a mirror, and one of Montag's eventual friends in the countryside claims the new world needs a mirror factory. Mirrors represent inquiry and self-knowledge. Censorship. Bradbury argues that the population censors itself by ignoring truths or positions that make it uncomfortable. Reading books, he says, encourages beneficial self-examination, while overstimulation only deludes people into being superficially happy. Analysis. Everyone must leave something in the room or left behind when he dies. Fahrenheit 451 is a bleak satire of a world that's too content being content. By wiping out the written word, the world is supposed to be free from dissent and upsetting information, but the only thing this brings is more unhappiness. The suppression of books is the suppression of free thought, which will slowly destroy any society.
So I thought that was very well done, and I once again encourage you to go to the website academicearth.org and check out the video, and check out many of the other things that they have to offer there. One more thing before I leave you today, I wanted to play a little excerpt of an interview that Ray gave in the early 70s to James Day, and he's talking about his philosophy of writing. And one of the things that's drawn me to Ray's work and helps me connect is the emotion and the humanity behind his characters and their motivations and often the passion that you can feel. And after listening to many interviews and comments by him about writing, that's not by accident. Those are the things that he enjoys in other people's writing, and those are the things that he thinks are important and core for a writer to have, as well as things like his use of metaphor and symbology in his writing. Those things aren't by accident. Those are things that he learned from the people that he admired and read as he was developing as a writer. And so those things aren't by accident. But he has some interesting thoughts about what's important when you're writing, and I'll leave it up to him to explain it to you.
Never went to college. Don't believe in college for writers. I think it's very dangerous. I think too many professors are too opinionated and too snobbish and too intellectual. And the intellect is a great danger to creativity.
Intellect is a danger to creativity?
Terrible danger, because you begin to rationalize and make up reasons for things instead of staying with your own basic truth. Mm-hmm. Who you are, what you are, what you want to be. And I've had a sign over my typewriter for 25 years now, which reads, "Don't think." You must never think at the typewriter. You must feel. Mm-hmm. And then your intellect is always buried in that feeling anyway. Mm-hmm. You collect up a lot of data. You do a lot of thinking away from your typewriter. But at the typewriter, you should be living. It should be a living mm-hmm. experience. And the worst thing you do when you think is lie. You can make up reasons that are not true for the mm-hmm. things that you did. And what you're trying to do as a creative person is surprise yourself. Find out who you really are. And try not to lie. Try to tell the truth all the time. And the only way to do this is by being very active and very emotional. And get it out of yourself, making lists of things that you hate and things that you love. Mm. And you write about these then, intensely. And when it's over, then you can think about it. Then you can look at it, well, it works or it doesn't work. Something's missing here. And then if something is missing, you go back and re-emotionalize that, so it's all of a piece. But thinking is to be a corrective in our life. It's not supposed to be the center of our life. Living is supposed to be the center of our life. Being is supposed to be the center, with correctives around, which hold us like the skin holds our blood and our flesh in. Mm-hmm. But our skin is not our way of life. The way of our living is the blood pumping through our veins, the ability to sense and to feel and to know. And the intellect doesn't really help you very much there. You should get on with the business of living.
So isn't that interesting? I just finished listening to the audiobook of Shadow Show, which is a tribute anthology written by many authors as a tribute to Ray. And I can't remember which one it was, but one of the authors said how they were in correspondence, as Ray did correspond with many aspiring writers. He wanted to be a force of encouragement for writers, and so he often corresponded with those that wrote to him. And one of the authors, in his author's note to his story, was talking about how in his correspondence with Ray, you know, Ray was worried about his development as a writer, because he had started to go to college and taking various classes. And so it's an interesting thought. You know, I've never heard in my life anybody that I admired and encouraged people not to go to college. But I see what Ray's getting at in this interview. You know, he doesn't want a writer's voice or a writer's core feeling, core being, to be corrupted by other people's opinions. And I liked how he talked about the balance of when you're writing the story, you should not think, you should feel and go with your gut and truly write honestly as you feel. And then, after the writing process is done, then you can go in and use your knowledge and your intellect to kind of scope what's in there. And it's very interesting writing advice, unique among what I've heard from other authors. I like to learn those things, and I like to share those things. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and this story. I hold a special place in my heart for this story, as it really did introduce me to another dimension of storytelling. Just some announcements before I leave. The Edgar Allan Poe Writing Contest will begin on July 15th. That may be the day that this podcast comes out. And by now, I should have the official written submission guidelines for the contest. available to you, and I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. You have from July 15th to August 15th to write your Edgar Allan Poe titled story, and I hope a lot of you take on the challenge to enter the contest and to find your inner Poe. As I announced last week, I am still working on the side podcast, Strewn Along the Path, and I will definitely be providing updates on the podcast and on the Facebook page for that as well. But for now, I must leave you. So until next week, be safe out there and journey on.
This is TJ Farrell from the Drama Pod, and I'm here to tell you that the Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. This means that while you cannot change it or sell it, you are encouraged to share it however and with whomever you would like. The theme music for the podcast has been provided by Man in Space.